Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. It's Foxworth Friday on a Thursday.
It is for me, for sure. I got me a nice little cup of coffee right here. Because it's Friday.
You look good, man. You look good. And I want to explain to people why it is that we so jazzed up for y'all. It's like, so you normally we do this in the morning, you know, I'm wearing whatever I'm wearing. Dominique, always not in what he wore on television. He immediately takes off his bulletproof suit and then just sits down in a t-shirt. But I was like, you know, we got an audience. It's the first time we've done this live show. Thank you to everybody that is here checking this out with us. And I told Dominique, because I didn't want to like okie-doke him and had, you know, me come out here with one thing and you out here in another. I was like, yo, I might get a little jazzy with the shirt. Dominique say, I think I'm going to break out the bow tie. I say, oh, you going to make me break out the tux? He say, I got a purple tux. I'm like, I got a blue velvet one. And so we basically got ourselves into this position where we is out here doing this for y'all, but it's really for us.
Yeah, I mean, we don't get to dress up that often. And everyone who listens to the show knows that I'm jealous of your hair. And I thought I was going to win with the purple tux. I didn't think that you could outdo the purple tux. But somehow the Bobby Jones got me beat. And my purple tux is like dark purple. It don't even pop like that. It looked like it's black.
Let me tell you what happened with this tux thing, right? So I reached a point in my life where I realized as an adult, I would probably need to own a tuxedo. And it's not even really as an adult. It's as an adult that now knows rich people. People invite you to something, they need to have a tuxedo. And I don't exactly have like dimensions that are very easy to get on the street. So I'm like, okay, cool. I'll get a tuxedo. And then you get the black tuxedo. But then you realize at some point, somebody might invite you to something like jazzy. And you're going to look like, you know, like the help or the butler if you got your black tuxedo. And so you go and get another one. And so I have a couple of if it needs to be fancy tuxedos, because now I can't wear this one but so many places, because anybody who is here tonight that's at that next place will have seen this already. And this has happened. And I think that you can vouch for this too. Every time any man looks at a woman is like, I don't understand why you care about whether somebody sees that you've worn this before. That's because women can get a lot of them clothes for cheap enough that they can keep switching them in and out in that way. Because I'm absolutely now concerned with the fact that somebody might see me again in this fly fancy tuxedo.
I'm not much of an Instagrammer, but I feel like Instagram probably ruined that. Because I know there was a time in my life where I was like, I ain't never wore this there. Like, I might have worn it a lot, but I ain't worn it to that place. But now if you put all your fits on IG, like it's dead to the world. At least you won't hit them the same way you did that first time.
How about looking back on the time where I had my good shirt? Instagram, it would have just been the same picture of me over and over again. Just like a different level of do you need a haircut or not? Because I had my good shirt. When I first started doing TV, I had my good jacket. Everybody's got that, my good shirt.
Yeah, I remember that in middle school. I had me this Tommy Hilfiger polo. Boy, you couldn't tell me nothing when I wore that thing with my Air Force Ones. I was really killing them. But yeah, I couldn't. They need to bring back the white tees, the icy whites, because, I mean, you can't. It's no way you can survive. How these kids going to survive? They all ain't got an endless supply of good shirts. You can't wear your good shirt on your date and then post it. And then you come to school on the first day of school next year. Can't pull out that good shirt again.
Yo, real talk. You were in college during the perfect time for what it is that we are discussing, because you were there for the white tee era. Yes. Like right then, 5 for 20.
It wasn't even just the fact that white tees were good. It was also like everything was baggy. So like you could go to the store and you didn't even need to have a size. Like, it didn't matter if the waist was 32 or the waist was 42. That thing had to be huge. You put a belt on it, you pull it tight. But as an athlete also, I don't know if it's the same on all campuses. I remember going to visit my brother when he was at Virginia State. It was a little different there. But on the white schools, at least the ones I went to, the athletes just wore the sweats that they got. Like, you just wore those sweats every day, flip-flops and sweats. But when I was at Virginia State, it was a fashion show. Every day you had to kill them.
Well, see, here's the thing about the fashion show at the Black College, because you're right, because everybody's clothes is intended to identify the people who they are and then try to go from there. And yours were saying, you know what time it is. That is what those sweats were saying. You know what time it is. So I went to Clark Atlanta University, as many of you know, and you'll hear all kinds of crazy numbers about what the like female to male ratio is, but it was very much so skewed toward female. And I'm here to tell you, it was a fashion show for the ladies. Yeah. By sophomore year, we all looked around and wised up and was like, what you gonna do? Right? Like if we all out here looking like this, What are your options? And your options already were pretty slim, like especially junior, senior year, where we got the people who flunked out, didn't have enough money, got to go home, take care of mama, all of that stuff. By that time, you stuck with me and whatever I got on today.
And that's that to me, I could be wrong, but that seems like the flunk out, I would guess, is a disproportionately male phenomenon.
It is. So
as you get to junior and senior year, the numbers are dwindling.
Yeah. Like the women are more likely to do that. I needed to go somewhere else, right? Because I was having a little too much fun. But the full on flunk out, oh, yeah. That's me. Like I was looking around for my dorm at graduation, my freshman dorm. And like, it wasn't none of us, but it wasn't a bunch of us.
Well, I mean, the same thing, the football class is different because if you can ball, you ain't going nowhere. If you can't ball, you got to go. So that was the difference. It wasn't about school for me. When I got to that senior year, it was like, I'm looking around like a couple transfer, new faces in here. But most of the guys I came in with could ball. So we were still all there together and we ain't really had no friends outside of football team. That's just not how, maybe it's different at different schools, but it tends to be the case. I remember freshman year, people started pledging. Like, mm-hmm. would you go pledge? I play football. I'm already a part of a fraternity. I already get abused for the right to wear an emblem. I don't need to do it twice.
And let me tell you something. That pledging the football players can become an unwieldy proposition. There's somebody listening out here that will hear this story that has been told. I know about a dude. He was like an all Power Five conference player in the 1980s. And the Kappas had wanted him to get online. For our non-African-American brethren, they the ones with the candy canes.
Hold on, can I take a quick time out? I feel like if you say they the one with the candy canes, that doesn't mean anything to people who don't already know what Kappas are. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm just, no, because like this, all the places the white folks go to college have black fraternities and they can't tell them apart. I have learned, like if you tell them the ones in the boots, they know exactly who you're talking about, right? And so he's online and they apparently were doing this thing where they take these dudes out in the field and they would give them the super wedgie. Like they grab them and they rip their draws all the way off. And so now they come around to the homie that we're referring to and they say they're going to do it to him. And he explained, you try that with me, I'm kicking your ass. And they're like, what? Let's go. We're going to have to talk about this. And so they take him outside because the thing is, he wasn't joking when he said that. Like, that was an accurate prognostication of how that would have gone. You're like, hey, man, you can't do us like this in front of the pledges. So how about you give us your draws and we rip a hole in them and then we go back out. Oh, and he's like, man, y'all a bunch of punks.
Yeah,
and he rolled out.
He had the power from the start. You said they was recruiting him. We had a dude, he was a walk-on dude, an Asian dude that like hung out with all the black guys, grew up in PG County, and he pledged Kappa. And he pledged Kappa before he walked on and like became a practice type of guy on the football team. And it was such a blessing to have him on the team because there were so many fights that were avoided. Because you know how it is at these clubs or at these parties. They're like, no, y'all can't come in here. That's all us football players needed to hear. Like, oh, you think this is your campus? You think you own this house or this building? And then it escalated from there. But old Luke Kim negotiated a few fights down. Appreciate him.
I'd love to hear his accent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you wouldn't be able to tell. He just sounded like a black dude. If you talk to him on the phone, like he grew up in PG County, which is like predominantly black. But he went to one of the schools, Suitland or something like that, or Roosevelt or something. So, yeah, he wasn't like the type of guy where you had any questions. You saw him from across the room and you was like, I know you.
Go. I will say this though with the fraternities, and again, I can only speak for the black ones. I can't tell the white ones apart. I don't know if that makes me a racist, but anyway, you guys aren't nearly as distinct in your imaging as the black folks are. And for the black folks,
marketing up.
Yeah, for black folks, it's like 4 or 5 of them, right?
Yeah.
But there's always this thing with cats, and I understand this. You've been getting mollywopped for months online, so you no longer fear getting into fights. But you always hear these stories about fraternities getting into fights with the football team. And if it is the Omegas, given that they generally operate at a higher weight class, they're the ones with the boots and the camouflage guys. All right. So like them, I kind of halfway understand it. They kind of attract that crew. But like, if you hear about the Alphas deciding they're going to get into a fight with a football team, I'm like, yo, man, you've been hanging around each other a little bit too long.
Honestly, we didn't have that many fights with the frats. It was just mostly talking. The fights were normally like when DC guys would come out to the College Park clubs And they was like, oh, y'all college kids. Like, y'all can't do nothing. And then, of course, the football players tend to be a different type of college kid sometimes who's had a different experience.
But, so when you say DC guys, are we referring to the element?
You better believe referring to the element. Yeah. Yeah. Those are Washington guys. The ones who come without the element, they're from Washington. The ones who are the element, those are DC dudes. They will come out. But something struck me as you were talking. I feel like being American like requires you to just like just ambiently, you know, about white culture in general. And it just hit me that I don't know any white frats. Like, I couldn't name one.
Well, hold on.
They aren't as distinct.
Well, I could name white frats, but why do I know who those white frats are? Because they done got in the news. And not just because they got in the news, like they killed a pledge. I'm not talking about that. Like, they made them drink themselves to death. Nope. I'm talking about they got on the news because they be out here on that sism. Like, that's where we, like, that. Yeah. Those are the, I can name you by name two white fraternities. And it's only because of allegations of racism and not even really allegations. Like, allegations, I think, is good because my bosses are probably listening to this right now. But, you know, the ones that be dressing up in their gray soldier suits.
Oh, man. We having themed parties and whatnot.
Yes.
But I'm racking my brain. I still can't name one. And it's like, I don't know. I'm surprised by that because I feel like I can name rock bands even though I don't listen to rock music. Like, I can quote things from Friends, even though I've never seen an episode. But I don't know, not nail white frat and all the black frats. Like, I know the black frats and sororities. Like, I know the distinct marketing that they go for. I know their hand signals. I know their sounds. They got calls. Like, I know all that stuff. Colors. I can't name a white frat.
Well, that's also because white folks don't be getting the license plate frames to still be wearing the gear when they're well into their lives. Like, it means something different for black folks with these fraternities. I guess to us, it's like, yo, you need to know that your ancestors didn't even have no fraternity, right? Like maybe it turns into that.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a sense of belonging that white people probably grew up and live with throughout the course of their life, where it's like, oh, yeah, this is my country. Oh, yeah, this my school. Oh, yeah, this is my neighborhood. Whereas black, it doesn't always feel like that.
Yeah.
Maybe you get a frat and you're like, hey, we started this. This is mine. I'm going to rep it hard.
Yeah. And then, so my mom and daddy listening to this. Don't worry. I ain't going to say nothing. I'll keep you safe in this one. I once knew somebody who pledged like grad chapter into one of the frats. It was the 2000s and he was well into his life. Like, I would not be surprised if he pledged because he finally had enough time to do so because he had retired. Like, he was a grown man. And let me tell you something. You would have thought that he did his probate show on the yard. I ain't never seen that level of excitement in my life. He was up on it. Like, it's all the hats, all the shirts, whole nine. And I was just like, what took you so long?
But how, I don't know. That seems like a distinctly young experience and behavior. Like, I have a hard time. You remember that story where it was like a 50-year-old football player? You remember that?
Yeah.
What took you so long and for who, for what at this point? Like, why would you put yourself through? Because I understand if you're like a timid or like shy or you need friends, you need to belong to something when you're 18, 19 years old, you're in college. Like, that all makes sense to me. You need help meeting girls, need some boys to have your back. Like, okay, maybe I'll go through this nonsense if I wasn't a part of a football team to be a part of this. But if you're 50, 60, 45 years old, don't you already like, did you miss out on that college experience and you finally reaping the benefits of that GI Bill? And you like, oh, we gonna do this.
And are you all like, the only camaraderie you getting is an actual like football team activities? Because right. I figure you're not living with these cats. You're not going to the parties, are you?
I hope not. Like, at certain point, what's happening at the parties you should have nothing to do with at 40 plus years old. Like,
he's at the party in their ear, like, you know, they don't make good music no more.
Who was that guy at the party? That seems terrible.
Yeah, right. Like, gosh. Is that your dad?
Yeah. I know you are a music buff, so maybe you were at college parties evaluating the music.
No.
That's not what we're here for. If I want to break down some music, I'm alone in my room.
Right. But if you're like 45 years old, all you thinking is, I don't know the words to this. Or who knows, right? Like, maybe he was out there with all the jams. Maybe he's a DJ also in his spare time while he is holding on to his youth. I just thought him being 50 years old and playing football just sounded painful.
Yeah, sounds ridiculous. You know how I know that music didn't matter at the parties? It's because growing up in Baltimore, I really liked club music when I was growing up. And that is not good music. But when you're at a party in Baltimore, when that comes on, it becomes good music. if you know what I'm talking about.
I'll give you a great example of that. It's not even about a genre. It's about a particular song, right? But I think I was in college when this was out. I think it was my senior year. And there was this song that was out. And it was a big hit, man. It was all over the place. But like, it just felt whack, right? Like the rapper couldn't rap, whatever, you know, all that stuff. Like the beat, I guess it was cool. It wasn't really coming down. And then I went to the club and that song came on. And I looked at what happened. And by the time it got to the hook, I was in there right along with everybody else. My neck, my back, like that I was like, this is the wackest song in the world. And then I heard the first couple notes of that drop at the club for the first time. And I watched the song, what went on. I was like, oh, this is smoking them out. This is they jam. This is they jam. Like I was, you know, I came up like, I was about the hip hop. You know what I mean? I was about that. I was about that real hip hop. And like, I never liked the booty shake and all that, like the Miami bass. I wasn't never about that, man. Man, I got to Atlanta and the first party I went to where they dropped, I just completely misunderstood what was going on here. Here I am listening to this music for its own sonic enrich. No, sirree, Bob. It do things to people. That's like go-go. Yep, nothing to get you into go-go, like going somewhere where they play the go-go. And for people who are not familiar with go-go, it's like the only in DC thing, because DC got all these only in DC things. And it's a very percussion heavy form of music. Doing the butt is like the most famous version of it. But Rock the Bells by LL Cool J, when you think about it, that's a go-go track, right? Yeah, but it's that. Tough. And being like, man, it sounds like Pots and Pans. How it sounded like to the Parasuco crew. This was they jam. And it's like, you know, I can understand and appreciate some of the nuances of this music now.
I'm with you. I remember, I know you were like an East Coast hip hop kind of New York hip hop listener, even though you were in Houston. And I was the same thing in Baltimore. And I remember like breaking down Double Entendres with my friends and like, I bet you ain't get this line. And then I got old enough to go to parties. And I recognized that the people that I was interested in could care less about what was being said. It was about how it made them feel. And that is probably a lesson. I grew up with just me and my brother. And I remember getting to college and like for the first time, like trying to actually seriously date somebody. And just growing up with my brother and like never having a real relationship, like there were three emotions. It was like happy, sad, or mad. Those made sense to me. Then I got to college and tried to like have a girlfriend. But I don't know. This ain't in my handbook. Like, what are you feeling? It's a combination. Is this something brand new? I'm sorry. I don't know. What? I can't fix that. I don't know what to do. So I'm going to just leave and I'm going to come back. It's like I'm going to hit the reset button. I'm going to unplug the controller and plug it back in and see what happens because I don't know how to deal with this.
See, I got to college and I was 16 years old when my feet hit the ground. Like I turned 17 shortly thereafter. But see, a wild thing about me growing up is, so I went to school in a school district that I was not zoned to go to and that was not particularly close. But an interesting component of that school district was it was kind of split between two area codes. And for you youngsters who don't understand this, you used to have to pay extra money to call people who live far and then extra money plus extra for people who didn't really live that far. It's a different area code, right? It was all bad news. So my social interactions in high school are not like anybody else's because I couldn't drive I couldn't drive and go hang out with no parties and like that. So college is where I did my first like interaction. The first time I realized like, oh, so there are girls who like me. Ain't that something? I knew there was like a couple, but I was unaware that, you know, this could be the case. Dog, I was so awful. Like I did not have any ability to understand and how to, like I barely understood how to talk to people my age, let alone trying to understand how to talk to them. I had no clue. It took me a good year and a half to get up to speed.
Yeah, I've been married for 10 years now. I have a son and two daughters. So I feel like an expert at this point. Like, and to be honest with you, my first reaction was probably the best one. Sometimes, you got to stop having the conversation. Sometimes you just got to walk away. It works all the time where it's like, all right, well, I see that something's happening right now. I'm going to go do something else. I'm going to come back when everything settled down and we could talk about this. That's the move that I was trying to pull when I was a youngster. I just didn't know what it was called yet.
You were not trying to come back and talk about it later.
No.
You were a youngster. You would just dip it.
Yeah, I was like, oh, no thanks.
To 20 minutes into this.
One sport topic. Are we talking about football players
point? Yeah, but this is how it works, right? This is generally how we do it. But I actually thought about it because normally we don't talk about what we're going to talk about. Maybe there'll be something. I'll be like, oh, yeah, Dominic, we're going to talk about da-da-da. But we was muted out before we could even get this going. And I had that brief moment where it looked like we was about to start. And Dominique was like, oh, I forgot something. I'll be right back. I was like, I hope that emphasis is on the back and the right. Like one in italics, one in bold.
You weren't worried. You trust me.
Oh, yeah. I think, yeah. What? Hey, we talked about this. You on time.
I don't know if it's the football, the military dad, or just general anxiety, but I get to everything a few minutes early. It's just the way it got to be.
Yeah. Now, we can give them a little bit of football, a little bit, because this is the last Foxborough Friday on Thursday before we have the NFL draft. And you actually like talk about the NFL for a living. Like they call you to come get on shows and offer NFL expertise, which means you got to do a lot more of this draft stuff than I do. Like all I got to do is just come on and mock it. They want you to talk about people and positions and all this. I do notice though, you avoid them shows and they be like, give me your top five defensive players.
Oh yeah, I'm good on that. I used to have to do a mock draft, but for the undefeated, but I hated it. So instead I opted for writing a piece about the 2011 draft and about Richard Sherman, which took a lot more effort and time, but it felt meaningful. It felt like something that I gave a poop about. And it felt like I was telling stories that people hadn't heard and I was uncovering thoughts and feelings that we weren't talking about. It didn't feel like me just throwing names on the wall, which I know the mock drafts do well, people like it, but man, I hate it. And I hate to burst your bubble, Bomani, but yeah, I'm up on some of this stuff. Now, the dirty little secret is when you do get up, they don't care if you know about nothing but the quarterbacks. You just need to know about 3-4 quarterbacks. Oh, and you are golden. Because if you try to come in there with, I used to try to come in there with some deep football analysis talking about safety movement and the nickelback and how you're going to attack them on third and short situations and late game situations. And Greeny would hit me with this one every time. I'm used to it now. Don't nobody tell Greeny this because this might hurt his feelings, but he say this all the time. Dominique, I find that very interesting, but you got to think about the guy who's just waking up or the girl who's just waking up trying to get ready for work. They're getting their kids ready. They having some coffee. Do you think that's going to make him stop and pay attention? He want to know what Patrick Mahomes is doing. It's like, you're actually right, Mike. you're dead on. Just because I care about this don't mean that the rest of these people do.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking that dude, Zach Wilson, once we figured out the Jets were going to take him number two, we stopped talking about him completely. Like, we're just like, okay, he's going number two. That doesn't make for very good television. And I'm trying to figure out, is this the first time ever that as an industry, we have decided that we just not going to second guess the Jets? Because, like, I don't really know nothing about dude. And that's in part because since he became number two pick, y'all ain't telling me nothing about the dude on television. But right. I'm sitting here like, the Jets said we taking him number two. And the rest of us were like, yeah, good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. The Jets are right, but Joe Douglas has done a decent job there, the GM, a better job than we're used to acquiring talent. And they got Robert Saleh, who hasn't lost yet and has like universally positive like reviews from players in the league and everyone in the league. So I think they're giving Woody Johnson, the owner of the team, a little bit of cover. So we're not looking at the history and all that other stuff, I guess, but there's plenty to be critical of. But also, like, he does really cool things, and we tend to get really jazzed up about some highlights.
I would love to hear a conversation with members of the Justin Fields family and get their scouting breakdown of one Zach Wilson.
You don't have to find Justin's family. Find any Black family in America that watches football, and I guarantee you all the uncles, I guess there aren't very many cookouts right now. Maybe they haven't Zoom cookouts. I guarantee you that at some point in the conversation, they're going to be like, yeah, so how's church? Good. All right. Yeah, you doing all right? Oh, who made the mac and cheese? That's good. You see what they doing to Justin Fields? That Zach Wilson guy from out there in BYU, that boy can't even do nothing. They ain't playing against nobody. Like, I guarantee you that conversation has been had by many people who are not related to Justin Fields.
But also don't forget that Justin Fields had this wild thing where he was kind of like the Michael Vick to Ron Curry, where Ron Curry in this example is Trevor Lawrence. Because they were in the same locality, right. And Justin Fields is like number two dude, which means if you think they got something to say about Zach Wilson, wait till they start talking about Trevor Lawrence. They've been practicing on that one for who knows how long.
You think Trevor Lawrence, but Trevor Lawrence Didn't he put out a tweet around George Floyd a while ago? Yeah. Like, I feel like, did Trevor Lawrence buy himself some goodwill? He was like leading marches.
Yeah. I believe he bought himself some goodwill with like that larger swath of African America that you refer to. But with the Fieldses, they've been trying to tell you why Justin Fields is better than him since them boys was in like the 10th grade. Justin Fields, as he has approached this process, like, I hope somebody warned him and told him, like, look, this is what the game is. Because I think in the end, it's going to end with him being the number three pick in the draft, because I just refuse to believe that Kyle Shanahan's a moron.
Yeah, I can't really see. Some people have been digging up some good highlights from Mac Jones and trying to convince us otherwise, and I see that. But it's hard. It is hard for me to imagine that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan are looking at these two guys and like, you know who's really going to scare the defense?
let me tell you who I bet is rooting harder than anybody else for the 49ers to take Mac Jones, and I don't think it's been discussed enough. Matt Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Because let me tell you something. If they let Fields get to four, Atlanta, you're not going to convince me for a second that they're going to let that one slide. And I'm going to be honest with you, because I think they got the new brother man as the general manager down there, right? Mm-hmm. All eyes on you, partner. Like, you know, like Arthur be paying a lot of cool lip service to a whole lot of cool stuff. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I'm just saying, all eyes on you. It would be stupid of you not to take Fields if he gets to that point. And if they let him slip past that point, I don't know why I have not heard more people talk about this. You tell me if I'm crazy. You think John Elway is going to pass on Justin Fields because he has Drew Locke? Are you serious? Because I know what John Elway says when he sees Justin Fields. And I bet you know what he says, too.
Hopefully he don't put it in that letterhead.
Oh, no. This is the other end of it. It's the, that boy reminds me a lot of myself. Like, I bet you if you would have asked John Elway all the quarterbacks that he felt like reminded him of himself, and I know for a fact that he told Cam Newton this, which tells me that if he thinks that Cam Newton reminds him of himself, which is not totally implausible, but he is probably out here comparing himself. He's like Larry Bird. Like, Larry Bird ain't out here comparing himself to John Havlicek and these cats, or like Rick Barry. Like, no, I'm comparing myself to these other dudes.
I have to disagree with you about it not being totally implausible. And I know that lots of people forget how athletic John Elway was because we think of John Elway when he was winning those Super Bowls. Like, I know that running the boots and all that stuff. And if you watch The Drive, when I wrote a piece about Lamar Jackson a couple years ago, I went back and looked at a bunch of like important pivotal like drives and plays. And The Drive, the big drive against the Browns, it was all about his legs creating time and sometimes running. So like, I recognize that. But he ain't Cam Newton. Like,
he ain't Cam Newton. Like that's going too far. But I'm just saying, even if he's got some like dysmorphia about himself, I'm just saying, when he sees Justin Fields, he's like, oh, that's exactly the kind of quarterback you need. Ralph Wiley once wrote something about Elway. And I forget what player it was he was talking about, but he was like, he runs like a brother. Like, it was a white dude saying that about John Elway. Like, everything, if you are a youngster and you've come across John Elway, you don't really have any concept of, like, there's, like, you can look at those stats, which are all awful.
Right.
But, like, no, you look at John Elway and you're like, you turn into, like, every white announcer, columnist, whatever you don't want to be. You're like, that's what a quarterback looks like right there.
Yep. What about Trey Lance, though? Could you see them passing on Fields and Mac Jones for Trey Lance? Like, I can see that happening.
Dude, the thing with Trey Lance is I keep hearing everybody talk about the upside, but he did, in fact, go to North Dakota State. Like, watching him is like watching them draft prospects whose highlights ain't in HD. Yeah. I don't really know exactly what to make out of this. I don't understand how you wound up in North Dakota State. Like, I got a whole lot of questions, but people seem to really swear by what – is possible with him. But I also remember about him too. Every time they tell me that a dude can't play to start the season, they all wind up playing damn near at the start of the year. Carson Wentz, the whole North Dakota State again, right? Carson Wentz, it was, well, you know, he's not going to be ready to play this year. They had a quarterback and traded him. They were like, nah, we'll be good.
Yeah, Trey Lance, the reason why, at least the story I read about Trey Lance, was he was in the middle of nowhere high school, and his father, who played in the CFL, refused to like send him to all of those prep camps and whatever. And so he was dominant in that middle of nowhere high school. Like, the big schools wanted him to play different position. That's how he ended up where he ended up. But those highlights, like, they help and hurt him. Because, like, I watch him and I'm like, man, he just ran over a linebacker. And I'm like, damn, that boy is cold. And then I rewind it and look at that linebacker and I'm like, is that a corner? I think that might be a corner. I had Youngstown State hot at me online because I was on Get Up. And I said, I like Trey Lance, but it's hard for me to respect him when he's going up against teams that end zone says Penguins.
Oh, they are the Penguins.
Yeah, and I was like, it's just a playful joke, but I also kind of mean it. Like, it's different. I know y'all, Youngstown State is pretty good for where y'all play, but it ain't quite like doing that against Alabama. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I feel you, but I myself personally, I ain't saying nothing bad about Youngstown in public. I don't know how familiar you are with Youngstown,
State.
Ohio.
I said Youngstown State.
I have to say it.
I assume, correct me if I'm wrong, but I assume that the college community is very different from Youngstown. I got nothing bad to say about Youngstown.
I'm just saying, while Jim Tressel is not from Youngstown, he was the coach at Youngstown State. And I imagine, regardless of what that sweater vest might tell you, he can navigate amongst the element. And Youngstown got like three elements.
Oh, yeah. I know plenty about Youngstown that I don't want no problems with. So I apologize to the university and anyone who lives close to it is affiliated with it. I don't want no problems with none of them Penguins.
I saw when you said that about the Penguins, I could not stop laughing. That is a real issue. Like, I'm looking up and I'm like, who are the other people in this movie?
I wasn't prepared to say that, but they started showing the highlights and it just said Penguins in the end zone. It was hard for me to, like, I don't know. We don't talk about mascotted Penguins very often, so it's hard for me to respect those plays.
By the way, speaking of parents and things to say, you talking about that with Lance, it got me thinking about that dude, Kyle Trask at Florida. And for people who don't know the story on Trask, if you follow college football, this has been said a lot. It is a noteworthy story. He is from, I forget where is it, Dickinson or Alvin or like some little town in Southeast Texas. And he wasn't even the starter in high school because De'Aaron King, who's now the starter at Miami, was the starter over him. And it's been this like heartwarming, feel-good tale that he didn't even start in high school, but he got on in college and had a great season last year at Florida. And I can't help to think to myself in the midst of that, you ain't even starting high school and somebody gave you a scholarship. Look at that white work, boy. That white 100% moving. But now I'm thinking, because De'Aaron King is not an NFL quarterback in all likelihood because he's just too small. I can totally see how, regardless of which one of them you think is the better player, if I'm running a high school offense, I'm out here with King before I'm out here with Trask. But I tell you this, let Kyle Trask get a chance to start on a team, but De'Aaron King does not. And let's go in live to the King family. See, that's how they do.
They let him do high school, take all them hits. Yeah, but then when it's time.
And keep in mind, King started at Houston. So they coming out and right. King gets a scholarship to University of Houston. Kyle Trask is going to Florida.
What did that conversation look like when the coaches came down to recruit him and they sat down with their head coach? Like, if I'm King, I got a problem with my head coach. I don't care. Like, whatever you told them was wrong, because they came down here looking for a quarterback and they left with the one who's behind it. Like, that's on you, sir. Like, me and you got a problem. And I understand the idea. Like, if you have a quarterback who's like a pocket passer, so to speak, you also need receivers and you also need offensive linemen. You know what you don't need when you got De'Aaron King?
None
all
of that.
You need is Kang. That's all you need. You just need a football and King. In high school, I was a quarterback in high school.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, for the last 8 games my senior year, we lost week 2. And so my coach was like, you know what? Why don't you just play quarterback? Because our quarterback was a senior. He left and we were good. And then all of a sudden we were losing the teams that we should beat. And he was like, let's just give you the ball. And then we were pretty good. Nobody else out there is good. Like Baltimore high school football, like you come across a couple D1 players throughout the entire season. That's it.
I don't really understand how anybody runs a high school offense with a pocket passer. Like, it's hard enough. Like, the things that you need around that in order to make it work, I just don't understand. Like, I mean, just running the bone, man.
You got to be one of these football factories where, like, the people that are there aren't necessarily from your neighborhood. You know, it's like you come here to play football because that's the only way you can find all the things that you need, I would think.
I just, like, every time I see that, I'm just like, how do you come up with an offense with your 227-pound left tackle?
Well, everybody's left tackles are not 227 pounds.
Well, I am from Texas. But the thing that gets lost, though, is it's still a bunch of those dudes, right? Like, it's still a bunch of dudes playing center at, like, 195 because there aren't but that many big and talented people. We ask a lot when you stop and think about it because every kid that's fat in elementary school and middle school, they can't wait to get that kid out there on the football field. And I'm like, I could have told you that that was not going down.
always sorry. It's like what Hollywood thinks that offensive linemen look like. Have you ever seen a football movie with an offensive lineman who actually looks like a real offensive lineman? They just get the dudes in Hollywood that play fat slobs in other movies. They're like, hey, you're going to be the tackle in this movie. Like, I ain't never seen a football or a real football player who looked like, what was that? The blue, what was that? Varsity Blues.
Yeah.
That dude that they had, like the big guy who was playing defensive tackle or whatever. I ain't never seen a good football player look like that. Like, I mean, even the big guys like Refrigerator Perry, like the guys that we think of as like big dudes, like they wasn't built like that. Yo. Just built like Grimace. Like that don't work in football.
It's funny you mentioned Refrigerator Perry, because Refrigerator Perry seemed to people like the biggest dude on planet Earth when he played. There would be no way to explain to people why a man that size even had a nickname in this day and age. Because like in the NFL, when you think about it, has largely legislated like the big old fat dude out. Because the only place there really was for him to play was defensive tackle. Ain't a lot of Gilbert Browns. And if they are, it's like Dexter
Sam
Lawrence.
Adams.
Exactly. Ted Washington. Those dudes ain't out there no more. Fat just evolved out.
Right. And I'm just upset now because this is another example of how your memory is so much better than mine. Because once you one-upped me on the Sam Adams, I started searching my mind for another name, and I couldn't get one. And I hate that about you, but I love it too. Because I'm like, man, he went for two. I can't think of a fourth fat dude. And you probably got one in your head right now. Don't do it.
I was going to tell you, Sam Adams, he grew up around where I grew up in Houston. And I hung out with his younger brother a couple times because we were about the same age. Like, nothing anybody would remember. But that dude, I was like, I didn't know it was possible to be that big at that point in life. Like, no, that is a giant brood, because Sam Senior played in the NFL for a bunch of years.
Not only did they legislate out the like fat dude, or just like the game evolved to a point where like just the run stuffer, the like 3-4 nose tackle is no longer a thing that you look for. Also, the athleticism that is necessary to play those positions. And I know people think about Aaron Donald now as the peak of athleticism. I never been on the field with Aaron Donald, but I was on the field with Haloti Ngata in Baltimore. That man was special. Like, I'm telling you, like, he moved like the running backs in practice, and he was enormous. I need to check up on him and see where his sons are at.
Yeah, that giant child.
Oh, he had a couple boys. His wife was a volleyball player, so she's also athletic and very tall, and he's athletic and very tall, so when them kids was four, I'd have sent them a scholarship. If I was at Maryland at the time, oh, you are in.
But dog, think about it, man. Ngata ruined Robert Griffin. He hit Griffin with the hit that initially tore his ACL, but how many yards down the field was it? That's the part that get this giant 350-pound man had run back down the field, and no matter what else happened, he caught Robert Griffin.
I think that it's a good thing that there is no like rugby league that pays enough money to lure him away, because he played a lot of rugby growing up and he carried the ball and he would like do the little rugby tosses in practice and stuff and be running around all agile. And I was just imagining somebody was going to bring him down. Like, for what? You have to have a real meeting with yourself at that moment when Haloti's bearing down at you. Like, what am I going to do? I can't get out the way. I can't get away from him. It was something else, man.
Well, I tell you, the last thing we'll do before we get to the next part of the program, since you mentioned his name, Aaron Donald. It turns out that he did not actually stop that dude out. And that actually makes me think more highly of the dude, because all of us were like, why in the world would you get into a fight with Aaron Donald? And he was like, nah, he just apparently came to and all he saw was Aaron Donald.
I guess I shouldn't assume the worst of that guy. Because there's this other scenario that I'm not saying happened and probably didn't happen.
Perhaps he was trying to get paid.
Is that he woke up in the hospital and his boys was like, man, you got whooped. He was like, who did it? I don't know. Aaron Donald was there. And then Tyrone and Billy. And he's like, oh, whoa. Who was there? Then he went, Google Aaron Donald contract. Somebody call a lawyer.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that's what he did, but it's possible that someone could have done
it. Did he say they bumped into him in the club earlier? Like, he had reason to believe that it was Aaron Donald, which then, by the way, this is the ultimate cautionary tale on this situation, which is that dude had his eye all the way closed up and it wasn't Aaron Donald. Let us take a moment and consider what it would be if it was Aaron Donald.
I mean, I like to think that I know can't remember who the comedian, but he was making a joke about how football players do football at the wrong time. And I like to think that most football players have made it to this point because they do have some control of that switch. The guys who don't have control of that switch, somewhere along the line, high school, college, first year in the league, second year in the league, they don't have the ability to hit that switch. They locked up somewhere. So I like to think if you made it to all pro defensive player of the year level, Aaron Donald, like, you know, when you're going a little too far, and you know how to turn off football when it's time to turn off football.
Oh, hold on. That reminds me.
Oh, it's Neil Brennan. That was the comedian.
Oh, yeah. That reminds me of something. Hey, Gabe, hit the music. I'm just messing with y'all. We don't have the ability to do it right now, which I did. That y'all keep telling me y'all hate it. Y'all love that. I love it too. And by the way, just so you know, every time I say hit the music, that story is great. Every single time we hit the music, that story is griggity great.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, this first story comes from politics.
Major Biden is shipping off to Pontico. The three-year-old German Shepherd headed to training camp after two biting incidents involving White House staffers.
This dog has moved into an environment that he's unsure about. If someone approaches them and reach out and he snaps, he's just saying, I'm fearful.
The First Lady's press secretary saying in a new statement, the off-site private training will take place in the Washington, D.C. area, and it is expected to last a few weeks. While Major is in the doghouse, his brother Champ, who has been with the Bidens for 10 years, seems to be doing just fine.
Not every dog can be set up in the same situation. So if Champ is able to stroll the whole house, fantastic, wonderful.
Previous presidential pups have run the gamut of White House access. Sonny and Bo, the Obama's Portuguese water dogs, could be let off leash to play as they pleased. But Barney Bush, a Scottish Terrier, proved that nipping was a bipartisan issue way back in 2008.
So Brandon, a lot of people might say that because Major is a German Shepherd that he's more prone to aggression. Do you think that's really the case?
I've been doing this for 30 years. And I have seen every breed have aggression. In fact, the Chihuahua has bitten more people than any large dog.
But there are certain things that will set a German Shepherd up for success or failure.
He has to be with people that he knows. So if left to his own devices, there's too much pressure and he's going to be in defense mode.
He moves to protect. But he is he's a sweet dog. 85% of the people there love him. He just all he does is lick them and wag his tail.
While Major will learn some stress management skills while he's away, our experts say it's also important to train the people at the White House so everybody can get along. For example, it's never a good idea to reach for a dog, not even to let them smell you. They can smell you from across the room. Instead, our experts say to call out to him.
Major Biden is shipping off to Pontico. The three-year-old German Shepherd headed to training camp after two biting incidents involving White House staffers.
This dog has moved into an environment that he's unsure about. If someone approaches them and reach out and he snaps, he's just saying, I'm fearful.
The First Lady's press secretary saying in a new statement, the off-site private training will take place in the Washington, D.C. area, and it is expected to last a few weeks. While Major is in the doghouse, his brother Champ, who has been with the Bidens for 10 years, seems to be doing just fine.
Not every dog can be set up in the same situation. So if Champ is able to stroll the whole house, fantastic, wonderful.
Previous presidential pups have run the gamut of White House access. Sonny and Bo, the Obama's Portuguese water dogs, could be let off leash to play as they pleased. But Barney Bush, a Scottish Terrier, proved that nipping was a bipartisan issue way back in 2008.
So Brandon, a lot of people might say that because Major is a German Shepherd that he's more prone to aggression. Do you think that's really the case?
I've been doing this for 30 years. And I have seen every breed have aggression. In fact, the Chihuahua has bitten more people than any large dog.
But there are certain things that will set a German Shepherd up for success or failure.
He has to be with people that he knows. So if left to his own devices, there's too much pressure and he's going to be in defense mode.
He moves to protect. But he is he's a sweet dog. 85% of the people there love him. He just, all he does is lick them and wag his tail.
While Major will learn some stress management skills while he's away, our experts say it's also important to train the people at the White House so everybody can get along. For example, it's never a good idea to reach for a dog, not even to let them smell you. They can smell you from across the room. Instead, our experts say to call out to him.
So I would like to make 2 points about this game. Number one, for the reporter, when you are assigned this story, it is either your favorite story you have ever worked of or the kind of thing that makes you want to quit your job. Point number two that I would like to make is putting it out there right now. That first dog bite me, I'm suing. Like, this is going to be like an Aaron Donald situation. That dog bites me, the first stop I'm making is to your local attorney.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm shocked because whenever I hear about these stories, but I guess he didn't actually maul somebody, but it's like they let him back in. He just had to go to school. Like, no. And he said the people need training. The people that got work to do, important work. They don't got time
to go
get dog training.
Yeah, but it might be, you know, people like to go run up on other people's dogs and touch them, and you know, people weird about these damn dogs. Maybe that's what it is. Y'all need to stop invading his personal space.
President Joe Biden, he's the one who's there to say whether or not that dog gets to stay or doesn't.
Yeah, like I say, when I own the White House because of this $20 million lawsuit that I'm going to win because I caught rabies. And let me tell you, if that dog bites me, I will go get some rabies just to sell the story.
Yeah, don't they normally like, I mean, I'm not advocating for this. I like dogs. They're fine with me. But I feel like when dogs bite people, that's all she wrote. But I guess if you're the president's dog, you get a little special dispensation, I guess.
I call Jim Adler the Texas Hammer. We're going to win everything.
Is that a local commercial?
Yeah. Okay. In fact, that's what I need to find. Not even necessarily Jim Adler, because I don't know nothing about him. But I just need to find some crazy far right-wing lawyer who's just looking for a reason to sue Joe Biden. It's on and popping.
I don't think that's going to be too hard to find, sadly.
Not at all.
All right, this next story comes from Tech.
In today's Tech Bites, a new option for Instagram when it comes to your likes. The site is trying out a feature allowing users to choose if they want to hide likes on their own posts or on the posts of pages they follow. The company has tested hiding likes in the past. They say it's a way to lessen pressure when posting.
I guess I'm just not old enough, right? I'm not in the age group that is really feeling pressure about the likes, right? Where this would be a reflection of me in any sort of way about these likes. But Dominic, I once saw this thing somebody did. It's a scene in New Jack City where they're riding around in the Jeep and a dude is talking about crack and what it does for people. And then he talks about, and the women, how they'll do anything to get some crack, except it wasn't crack in his hand. It was a like.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, and that's like the realest thing in the world in so many ways. Like what I was talking today on Twitter about it, like I do not understand. I've never thought about Twitter likes before. Like I don't click them. I don't have any utility for it. Instagram, I understand it a little bit more, but even still, like it's so wild, the power of the like button.
I'm not much for Instagram, but on Twitter, I'll like people's stuff mostly because it's like customary. Like I want my friends to know, like, hey, I saw your thing, you know, or there's something that I actually like and I want to like teach Twitter to give me more stuff like that, I guess I'll do that. But I do have to be honest, I may not be as advanced as you emotionally, because if I put up a joke that is really good and it don't get the likes that I think it deserves, I'm a little annoyed. Like, hey, y'all missed this. This was quality content.
Well, I do have that feeling from time to time. But for me, it's not about like retweets are the thing that I looked at on that measure. That's why the likes part on Twitter in particular, because that was almost like a late addition to the program. People like really, really think about it. But there are times where I was like, this is way funnier than anything else that I've said. Like, did you guys just not get the joke? Or are you afraid to send this out? Because I do know when I send stuff and I'm like, oh, you're just afraid. Yeah. Or today I said this thing out about not retweeting the people that you hate and folks that say ridiculous stuff. And that got all around. Everybody's so excited about it. Made the point because the guy said something about verified accounts, sent, you know, dunking on like the Tucker Carlson clips and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh no, it's disingenuous to blame this on the verified and prominent accounts when y'all out here finding some one person with 150 followers and everybody retweets him and bangs on them. And for whatever reason, that, which is right in line with the same logic that made me a hero earlier in the thread, nobody wanted to share that part. No, sirree, Bob, that was a little bit too much of that high heat, that high stinking cheese.
I guess baseball is fun. I guess I can understand it a little bit the more we talk about it, because it's possible that, especially on Instagram, they might feel about the way they look the way I feel about my joke.
But I'll
be damned if I don't think about that joke later in the day, a week later, like, man, they just ain't get it. Must have went over their heads.
You know, the thing is, though, I must be risk averse, because if I worried that much about how many people liked the way that I looked in that picture, then I just wouldn't put the damn thing up. Yeah. And here's the other thing, too. The ratio of likes to whatever you put up there is not like about how good you look. It's about all these other factors. Right. Like, I've noticed this. If you really want to get likes, put a picture up with somebody's baby, or put your own baby up there. People feel obligated. I click pictures of children. Like, that's the thing. My friends put the kids up, I'd be like, okay, I see the kid. That's the one thing that I'll click like on. Otherwise, all you're doing is feeding the algorithm that is controlling your brain.
But this is one more of those things that we talk about sometimes. It's like there's a age line where if you're under it, you like grew up in this. And like Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and all that stuff like that is like life to you. Like, you grew up in that. For me, I didn't get on Facebook until 08. And so, like, I was a grown up by then. I had money. I had a little job. I was doing all right. So, like, I understand. And I'm like, hey, this is a cool little thing to mess with. I don't do Facebook anymore, but Twitter, like, yeah, this is a little bit fun. Instagram, I scroll it every now and then. But for them, it's like how I felt about going to the dining hall in college. Like, that is the place to be.
2008. I had a little job, says former NFL veteran Dominique Fosworth. Gabe, we got one more.
This next story comes from tech.
In today's Tech Bites, TikTok agrees to pay $92 million to settle dozens of lawsuits. The popular app accused of sharing private user data with outside parties, including some based in China. The money would go to actual TikTok users. The deal still needs court approval.
So, Gabe, I could not really see you as having one. And if you did, it would be for your cat. Maybe you were like living this life that I did not know about, where you were doing dances on TikTok that nobody knew about. TikTok has become
a TikTok account.
You have a TikTok account? What you be doing on TikTok?
Nothing. I've never posted a video.
Okay, because see, that's my thing. TikTok, of all the apps, it's the most look at me of the apps. Like, I can't think of anything to do on TikTok other than beg people for attention. Like, every now and then people use it to be kind of informative. Ain't nobody getting on TikTok for that. Like, I remember when Instagram used to be, I always say Instagram once was for the camera that faced out, and then it became for the camera that faced back, right? TikTok, every time I look at that, I'm like, they out here harvesting. Like, we can't be that gullible. They understand people's needs so badly for somebody to laugh at them or tell them that they look nice or anything else, that they're like, yeah, go ahead and do this, and we're going to harvest all your information. And everybody's like, I mean, they just got it. You can't act like you addicted to TikTok. You could quit this. We keep hearing all these different stories about them harvesting your information. People are like, yeah, but I got to do the new dance that everybody else is doing. But it's cool because I'm going to do it with my mama.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest. I can't see a reason to ever want to post it. But there's some entertaining, pretty talented people on TikTok. You have to scroll through some garbage every now and then.
Yeah, see, but that's the thing, man. So maybe we need a TikTok pro, right? Yeah. Like, as I think I've told you about this before, one of the things that's come to annoy me a bit about social media, I realize, and I'm not necessarily being fair, is that I produce content for a living.
Right.
Therefore, I see the content that these amateurs are putting out. And it's like when the Birdman came to play with y'all at 24-Hour Fitness. Like, I'm just looking at y'all like, okay, y'all think y'all can hoop. All right, cool, right? So maybe I'm just being unfair on this one. But TikTok is the bridge too far for me.
How's it too? What do you mean, bridge? Oh, you mean for you to get on it? If you are looking for, I mean, you don't need good content, but of the social media apps, like, TikTok feels like the one that has like actual like people who have put in some time to make actual good videos.
Okay, that's fair.
There's a lot of trash on it too. You have to scroll through.
But
a lot
not everybody's self-aware.
I got some TikTok sommeliers in my life that just send me links. I click the one link, I watch it, I laugh hard, and then I move on.
But with TikTok, isn't TikTok like the only social media platform that's kind of come around since your career has kind of like crested to the point where you would have had to have adopted it pretty late in the game?
Yeah. I'd be all the way out. But again, people listen to If You Haven't Heard Before. Everything that terrifies me is what TikTok is all about.
TikTok for me, it missed me. It missed me in terms of like my generation and where I'm at. Now I can officially be like, I'm too old for that.
There you go. Welcome to your 30s.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
You know we had to do it for the live show. Bring out the all-time favorite Why I Quit Football stories.
This is great because we've never done this with you to evaluate these moments for people.
I'll tell you why I quit football at the end.
All right, this first voicemail comes from Emil in Baton Rouge.
My time that I realized football was my back was when I was a freshman here in Baton Rouge. We played a school called Northeast High School, and on that team was Trendon Holliday, who was like 5'6". You know, he went on to play for LSU, great return man. Well, on kickoff, one time he took the ball and took it back to the house, and in the process of taking it back, I tried to tackle him, he stepped on my chest, and then ran right over me, and that's when I knew that it was probably best that I stick to school and not try to go anywhere pro or college.
Yo, Trendon Holliday was one of them bowling balls, like super fast and like 5'6", 180 or something like that. Damn.
Yeah, I don't mean no disrespect to my man, but I don't think that he decided that he wasn't going to play professionally or in college. I believe Trendon Holliday made that decision for you, my friend.
Yeah, I do think he's exaggerating a little bit. Like, it doesn't sound like he was going to, like, the Elite 11 camp. And then all of a sudden this happened and he decided to change his entire focus. It was apparently, it sounds like people was trying to make a point to him and he wasn't hearing it until Trendon Holliday drilled it through his ear hole.
Yeah, man, I had plenty of moments like that where I probably should have quit football, sadly. I mean, nobody stepped on my chest, though. That's a bridge too far, as you would say.
All right, Gabe, what's the next one?
The next voicemail comes from Daniel in Cleveland.
So the time I quit football, grew up in Alabama, and I was playing football as a brand new kid in my school in Muscle Shoals. So the player that got me to quit would become a first-round draft pick named Jason Allen. They put my very lanky self at linebacker for the first time I had ever played football. Jason Allen ran the ball and juked me so hard that I fell down. Immediately feeling my pride wounded, I grabbed my knee, not hurt at all, just to try and act like that's what happened, that I was not just unathletic. So the coaches come over, I'm holding my knee, they're asking what's wrong, said I don't know, my knee hurts. They call an ambulance over, and now I'm kind of stuck with it. So I have to get loaded in the ambulance with my mom, driven to the hospital. I get there, the emergency room doctor looks at it, looks at me, and the hero of all things, the doctor looks at my mom and says, oh, it looks like he just sprained his ankle. He needs to wear an ACE bandage. Or sprained his knee. He needs to wear an ACE bandage. And didn't tell on me for losing all of my balance and embarrassing myself on the fourth week of me even being at this school. So that was officially the end of my playing days. And I'd like to thank Jason Allen for making me now someone with a master's degree doing something completely different.
He rode that all the way out to the hospital?
It seems like, call me crazy, but that's the last thing I'd want to do. If I get broken down, which happened to me, LaDainian Tomlinson did it in my rookie year. You could look it up if you care to. But I'm trying to get up and get out as quick as possible. I don't want nobody to dwell on that moment. He like draw all the attention. Somebody gonna go back and watch that tape to see what happened to your knee. Like, I don't understand the strategy there. It's like, get up and get on with the game, I would think.
Well, but have you've seen, I'm sure you were in, I think it's your freshman year in college, the Greg Jones Dexter Reed collision in North Carolina. Yeah, where Greg Jones, who I've never met before, but by all accounts in every video game I ever played with him in from college on up and just from watching him, appeared to be pound for pound the strongest football player that I have ever seen. And he hit Dexter Reed so hard and knocked Dexter Reed's helmet off. And it was terrible because Dexter Reed was coming from the other side of the field. And clearly Greg Jones saw him coming. So he like coiled up just for this moment. And Dexter Reed has like 2 Super Bowl rings. He was a great college football player. And he is not a dude that you want to try. All of those things came together. None of them could keep his helmet on his head. Dexter Reed popped right back up.
Yeah, that's what you do in that moment, I would think. I saw that play and I played against Greg Jones, and Greg Jones wasn't going to get me like that because I saw Greg Jones. I whatever pride that my man Dexter had, I did not have that. I was coming for Greg's shoestrings.
No, that play was a metaphor for that terrible Carolina team and that whole season. Dexter Reed just trying to do the work of 11 men, getting his head knocked off.
Did you ever fake an injury in your career at all, Dominic?
I didn't need to. I mean, it hurt enough. I mean, the opposite. My only year in Atlanta, it was a contract year, so I could not afford to have any injuries. Eddie Royal came back, crackbacked me when Jay Cutler was scrambling out of pocket. He was with the Broncos. Eddie Royal crackbacked me, hit me in the chest. I hit the ground, got up, next play, walked to the huddle, start coughing, spit blood into my hand. It's like, oh, that's interesting. Wipe that hand on my jersey. This is a contract year, baby. We ain't got time to bleed.
And that was that. Boy, and that is why I stayed in school.
Smart.
All right, this next voicemail comes from DeAndre and Aurora.
It was junior year, varsity home game. We were facing our rivals, only down 3 points, might I mind you. And apparently, well, he called himself the best player on the team. His name was Nathan. Can't stand him. He broke a 60-yard run and fell. Didn't get touched by nobody, fell at the 3-yard line. Cost us the game. Next day, me and my friends gave up our pads and said, we're not going to be getting beat up to lose like that.
Yeah, nah. I applaud anybody that just looks up and realizes they're playing for a losing football team and does the math. Like, I do think that we need to give cats a lot more credit for they stick to it in this and their dedication to their teammates to be willing to go out there and literally get their keisters handed to them once a week. Just because, you know, you ride something out to the end. Because I do think that quitting is a little bit underrated. I would definitely like giving that some thought.
I love Aurora, Colorado. It was right where close to where I live when I played in Denver. So shout out to Aurora. But I never really was on a bad team. Like Pop Warner, we were always really good. My sophomore year, we were all like sophomores on varsity. We only won one game that year. But then the next year we won 8. And every year in the NFL, I was on good teams. So I don't really know what it sounds like or what it feels like to be terrible. Sorry, can't relate.
The Orange Bowl.
We only lost one game that year.
and the Orange Bowl.
That's a postseason. Postseason don't count. Orange Bowl is just an exhibition. We was taking it light. Florida was out there taking it seriously. Relax. We just having a good time.
Every time somebody talks about one of them schools, they be like, they're not going to take the bowl game seriously. I bet you'd be like, I wouldn't be so sure of that.
Man, Florida was playing that thing like they thought they still had a chance at the national championship game. We was out of that game by the end of the first quarter. That was over. We was looking at each other like, we good. let's just get out of this thing healthy. Get ready for next year.
All right, Gabe, we got anything else?
All right, this last voicemail comes from Joel in Missouri City.
I want to take you back to the spring of 1998, back when I was playing at a college football program that, you know, wasn't a powerhouse or anything. But, you know, in recent years, it's good enough to have beaten the University of Texas 7 of the last 9 years, okay? So, anyway, we weren't that great during my days there, but they were on the rise. We had just gotten a brand new coach. He installed a brand new offensive system. And I'm looking at this like, boy, I don't know if my future is going to be in football. I mean, for one, I just was like not loving practice, man. And if you don't like practice in college football, then you got a problem because, I mean, that's what all you doing. You know what I'm saying? You get up for workouts. You got these practices and film study and study hall. And you were just like, man, you know, it's just a day after day grind, man. And I was thinking to myself, like, what am I doing this for, bro? I'm not going to the league, you know what I'm saying? And I'm looking in my meeting room and there were dudes there that were going to go to the league. You know, I played running back. And at that time, one of the running backs I was in there with played in the NFL. He'd been the MVP of the 1998 Sun Bowl. There was a fullback that went on to play a couple years in the league. And then, oh, there was another dude who was inducted into the Hall of Fame a few years ago. His name was LaDainian Tomlinson. So I'm looking at this situation like, bruh, I'm okay, but I don't think I'm going to ever get a chance to play here. So anyway, one of our first days of spring practice, and I'm just dead. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those, like, just terrible Texas spring days, already 90 degrees. We're getting run to death, and I'm just not making it. And I'm thinking in that day, I'm just like, boy, I cannot wait till this is over because I don't know how many more days of this I have left in me. But anyway, end of the drill, I'm look up. I see LaDainian Tomlinson staring at me, just shaking his head, just like, you know, like I just let everybody down. And I don't remember exactly what I did, but I do think I was holding up my group. And then the defensive coordinator at the time who was running the drills, his name was Gary Patterson, looks at me and says, son, you've got the feet of an offensive lineman, and that's not good for a running back. So I'm thinking, you know what? That's it. I think football is over for me. Maybe I should go pro with something other than sports. And I did.
Joe from Missouri City. Joe from Missouri City. TCU won 7 out of 9 games against Texas. What was that Gary Patterson was in the news for last year? Like, I know you're probably going to think to yourself it was something about beating Texas. I guess that happened too. But like you say, hey, that's commonplace. I recall Gary Patterson saying some things to his teammates that he should not have said to his team, as I recall. Foxborough, if you remember that, he was the one that, like, he's like, I didn't say the word. I was talking about them.
Right. Word. That was Gary Patterson. I remember that.
Well, he was one of them. It was a run of them. Like that. That was when people were getting their cards pulled in the midst of COVID. Right. Everybody was out here snitching. They did not feel like putting up with stuff.
What a scary time for the white man. I can't imagine, especially the white football coach.
Yes.
Like, there can't be one college football coach. Maybe there are a couple of them who weren't nervous. Like, man, I hope them kids from 98 don't come out and start talking.
They out there, I say they making them calls like some dudes is making it 2017. Like, hey, I just want, you know, I know me and you, you know, we went out that one time and I just like, we're good, right? We good? Like, that's how I feel like a whole lot of those coaches were. I just wanted to, you know, I didn't know if, you know, you probably don't even remember it, you know, but like, we good? A whole bunch of dudes were making those calls.
Oh, gosh, man. What a time.
Yeah, man. But hey, ladies and gentlemen.
Wait, hold on. Fox has to share his Why I Quit Football story.
Oh, yeah. I set it up like it was a big deal. I got paid. And I was like, you know what? I don't need this no more.
But that is not the spirit of this conversation.
I got paid. I tore my ACL. Then I came back and I was like, I'm slow. Oh, they can't take it back? All right. We
you
good.
You the whole reason they don't want to pay people. You just
don't pay them then.
You say don't pay them. That's a union man right there.
Let's lean in on the them.
Yeah, there he is. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on The Right Time, Foxworth Fridays. Dominique Foxworth, appreciate you for this as we've gone so far. And remember, follow The Right Time, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.